you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Coming up on the show, we'll discuss the Eastern Conference. We'll discuss Zach LaVine, what's gotten into Lauri Markkanen, and of course, the passing of the commissioner, David Stern.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Hello, everybody. This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I am your host, Jason Goff, and I have the pleasure of being joined by Chicago Bulls senior writer for The Athletic Chicago, Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So, Darnell, in the wake of the news that has hit the NBA over the last 48 hours or so, former NBA commissioner David Stern passed away. And it's the only commissioner that I've truly ever known as a fan, like the one commissioner, because when I was a kid, it was, you know, Pete Rozelle and all these other guys for the NFL, Paul Tagliabue, and now Roger Goodell. But the NBA, till very recently, was David Stern's league. And for 30 years, he presided over a league and brought it to a level globally that I don't think anybody foresaw. And obviously, with the help of Michael Jordan becoming an icon, not just in basketball, but in sports, that was pushed along. When you think of David Stern in the time that you've covered the NBA, whether it be Oklahoma City or here in Chicago, what comes to mind?
He was a friend of Oklahoma. And I almost wrote this, for real, for everyone to read. But when I remember David Stern, when everyone was fighting like hell to get the Seattle Supersonics to stay in Seattle, for whatever reason, David Stern was the guy who was a friend of Oklahoma. I could thank a lot of people for my career, but David Stern moving the Sonics to Oklahoma City definitely helped. But not just that, but before that, with the Hornets, when the New Orleans Hornets were displaced by Hurricane Katrina back in 2005, and Oklahoma City had to temporarily host them, there was a relationship and sort of a bond that grew with Oklahoma and David Stern. And people at my shop at the Oklahoman at the time were fortunate enough to work with David Stern and his staff a bunch during that two-year stretch. And we got to know him a little bit and work with him professionally. He was always kind, always gracious. And he just was a sharp, sharp man. You could tell he was always the smartest guy in the room, but he always liked to joke and kind of needle, and that was fun whenever he would come around.
Yeah, definite visionary, and for a sport that is predominantly black, understood how the consumer would relate to the product and how he had to market the product as well. I mean, I remember as a kid there being a lot of fighting in the NBA, and we used to make jokes about the cocaine 80s in all sports, but definitely in basketball and all the things that happened to the league. And even when I was a kid and the dress rule, having to wear suits or having to be dressed up on the sideline or having to be dressed up walking into the arena, I remember when that happened, I was like, oh, he's not letting these young brothers express themselves stylistically or with a fashion, but he always had his eye on what was going to grow and help the product, which I can definitely respect. At the time, I didn't agree with it, understood it, but now that you look back on it, he's taken leaps and bounds, and it is arguably the second biggest or second most important product when we talk about sports worldwide. Soccer worldwide is always going to have that attraction and natural dedication by their fan base, but basketball has been taken to a level because of the thoughts and the visionary talents, revolutionary talents of one David Stern. So he will definitely be missed, and I'm sure a lot of things that are happening around the NBA the last couple of nights and tonight in Chicago, I'm sure there will be a tribute. But all the people who have stepped out, and Bill Russell and LeBron James and Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, a lot of people, and everybody's had terrific things to say about a commissioner that presided over the league during its definite generational and overall growth. So moving on here, speaking to Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic Chicago, you can follow him on Twitter, as I do, at Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, this Bulls team, we're in a new year. It's 2020, and everybody's throwing out all their IG and Facebook and social media captions, but we all know that sometimes the last year will be the same as the new year. What, if anything, do you expect to change in 2020 for these Chicago Bulls?
I expect them to not blow so many leads. That's what we saw early in the season. I thought that was a sign of a young team coming together with seven new pieces and two new assistant coaches who were really their first and second assistants. So, you know, that was to be expected to a degree, but I don't expect them to blow as many leads. I expect them to close games better. You know, they struggled with that a lot this season. But they've gotten better. It helped that they weren't playing the greatest competition, closing some of those teams, but they did it, and you got to give them credit. So I expect to see that a little bit more. And they've been more competitive. They were more competitive at the end of 2019, at the tail end in December. So I expect to see that to continue in January, February, March, and the April slate.
You know, coming into the season, obviously the All-Star game hasn't been here in 30-some-odd years, and now that it's returning to the United Center and to Chicago, there was some onus put on the shoulders of one Zach LaVine to represent not only for the city, but for the Chicago Bulls franchise. And now that we've seen the early returns on the All-Star voting, he is fifth in terms of guards in the Eastern Conference. That's a lot higher than I thought he would be coming into this point and this juncture of the season, but there's also some anomalies on the voting in the Western Conference. Alex Caruso, the backup guard for the Lakers, is ahead of Devin Booker. So obviously, once teams and organizations and social media accounts get their early returns, they'll put on their pushes for their guys that they think should deserve those votes. Do you think Zach LaVine has performed like an Eastern Conference All-Star so far this year?
To a degree, he has. If you just look at his numbers, I mean, there aren't too many guys who have comparable numbers or better numbers than him, probably certainly not 11 other guys in the Eastern Conference. Yet, you know, his team hasn't won, and that's going to be an indictment of him when selection time comes around. I'm with you, though. I thought he was a little high at five. I mean, that was a little surprising to me. And when I first looked at the list, I didn't even see his name. I'm seeing Bradley Beal, Dinwiddie. And I didn't even see Zach LaVine. I missed him the first time. So to see that he did come in at five, you know, it went from, wow, where is he, to, wow, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
I mean, put it this way, Jason. He got 15,000 fewer votes than Russell Westbrook did in the West.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's staggering. That's staggering. That's the machine. Welcome to Chicago. Vote early and vote often.
Right? Yeah, so, but I mean, I think he's played the part. I just think his team needs to win. And ultimately, it might not matter because you only have, I believe, it's six winning teams in the East right now, maybe seven, to include Brooklyn. So it's not like they got that much to choose from if they want to be picky about getting players from winning teams.
Let's jump into this roster, man, and the running mates for one, Zach LaVine. You know, Kendall and Will and I talk about it on the pre- and post-game show all the time about what this team is made of and what they should be doing. You mentioned in 2020 you don't expect them to blow as many leads as they blew at the end of 2019 here. What were some of the reasons? Because I don't think it was any one thing. I mean, obviously the coaching, the system, the players' will and fight, rotations, all those things. I think it all was thrown into a pot and led off to a very disappointing start for the Chicago Bulls. What do you think, if you had to put your finger on it, why were they a little underwhelming in the last couple of months. December obviously was a better month for them. Defensively, they started to play better basketball. But if you had to put your finger on two or three things that you noticed from the outset of the season that just didn't seem right, what would it be?
I mean, this is going to be me kind of excusing them a little bit, but I think they were underwhelming because they've been so inexperienced. So many guys that are on this roster are so young. These guys don't really know how to win. They don't know how to close games. I do think that the Bulls use that as an excuse a lot, the youth factor or the injury factor, but it really is true in this case. This is a young team, either the second or third youngest team in the league, and they're without one of their more veteran players than Otto Porter. That's hurt. And they're relying on young guys, 24-year-old Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen still, 21, 22, something like that. So these guys aren't proven players at this level, and they just haven't been there yet to know what it takes to get done. And you can see that manifest itself down the stretch when these guys just look like they don't know what they're doing. And they get sped up, they get unorganized, and suddenly the wheels fall off, and they go from being up to losing the game.
What happened with Lowry the first couple of months? I'm going to ask you the question that everybody asked me walking around the streets of Chicago. But
oh, you get that too, huh?
Oh, my God. Like that and why isn't Mitch Trubisky better? And I'm like, dude, I can only handle one of those questions at a time. But what would you say, if anything, that you saw happen to Lowry? I thought it was a mixture of his personality along with an offense that allows you to be passive if you choose to be so. What did you see out there?
Well, I do think a lot of it did have something to do with his personality, at least in part. And in terms of his willingness to step aside and, one, let Zach LaVine be the guy, and, two, also try to defer for the greater good. I thought he tried to put aside some of his own desires, needs, out there on the court, especially offensively, to give the system a chance to flourish and have some of his teammates succeed as well. I think he did that maybe to a fault, to where he needed to be more aggressive. And we talked about that so much in his first two seasons that he would finish so many games with 8, 9, 10 shots, and we'd ask him all the time, why aren't you being more aggressive? Why aren't you being more assertive? Why aren't you taking more shots? But his thing is he can always get his shot. He wants to do it in the right way and get smart shots, and also not hurt the team by being selfish. Lauri Markkanen needs to be more selfish. That's the bottom line. He's too talented to walk out of games with 10 shot attempts. He's got to put pressure on defenses way more consistently than he does, and that's been disappointing in his third season.
And I think the play of Tomas Satoransky in no part and parcel is it directly attributed to, I think, his uptick this month in Lauri Markkanen. I mean, Tomas Satoransky has been the aggressor, has found Lowry, has found Wendell Carter Jr. in positions where they can convert easier baskets than just, I think the beginning of this season you saw the stark contrast between having a point guard who was going to take hold of this offense, kind of like what you saw with Ricky Rubio in Phoenix and what maybe Darren Collison would have been if he hadn't retired. And now, obviously, there's talk about him coming back. But I think Lauri Markkanen is a guy who needs someone to tell him or put him in the positions to say, hey, you're damn talented, man. You're 7 foot tall. You're agile. You can shoot the ball a little bit. You can put it on the floor a little bit. We need you to be a go-getter. And I think what you've seen out of Tomas is taking a little bit more of that onus on himself. Am I wrong in that assessment, or what are you seeing in terms of their point guard play and how both of those young bigs have kind of benefited from that over the last 3 weeks or so?
I can't figure out. I can't figure out Satoransky because it's so clear that when he's assertive, when he's looking for his shot, when he's looking to set up teammates, when he's using his length and athleticism, or his length and savvy, I should say, defensively, he's a game changer. He can be an all-around impact player. But he doesn't choose to do it every night, and I don't understand why not. A lot of the same things I said for Lauri, I talked to Tomas about, and he said the same thing in terms of not wanting to break off the offense, not wanting to be selfish, trying to run the team from a smart, functional way. But he can stand to do more, just like Laurie. And when he does it, he's great, and he makes his teammates better. And when he doesn't, he's just kind of out there. And I'd really like to see him become more consistent in terms of constantly applying pressure.
Speaking of applying pressure, is it just me, or does Daniel Gafford look like a guy who is on Wendell Carter's neck a little bit in terms of minutes on this team going forward? Because all this dude does is rim run, block shots, and try to dunk everything. And that's what I like in a big man. I like Wendell a lot. I think Wendell definitely has a place. I think the Al Horford comparisons were a little much early because I don't think Wendell looks to score the way Al does, and Al did when he got drafted by Atlanta. But this Daniel Gafford thing, I think, is very interesting. I think also it doesn't help Jim Boylan out too much that when Denzel Valentine finally got a chance to play, he looked good, and now Denzel has kind of struggled a little bit over this last week. And then Daniel Gafford, when he finally got a chance to play, he looked really good. But I'm liking what I'm seeing out of the young big man out of Arkansas.
I do too. I mean, it's not hard for him to succeed, and he can just step on the floor and have success doing the things that he does naturally well, which is, like you said, running the floor, blocking shots, rebounding, playing a little defense. He's not a great post defender. He's not great. And I watched him Monday night against Milwaukee, and you could see several times when Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn were pointing out the spots on the floor where Daniel Gafford needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You could just tell that the rookie just doesn't have it all there yet in terms of understanding the playbook and some of the things that they're trying to do strategically. But part of me wants to say, who cares? Because when you have an intimidator like that, I saw him make Giannis Antetokounmpo pump fake. I saw him make Giannis hesitate from in close because he's played this team three times. I don't think Gafford played the first time, but he played the second. That was his big breakout game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he remembers that game very clearly, and he knew that he couldn't just go up and challenge Gafford at the rim, and sure enough, Gafford rejected him. He swatted him. So, I think the word is getting out on Gafford, what kind of athlete he is, and guys are starting to take note and change their game accordingly to make sure that they know where he is and he's accounted for before they try to make a move inside. That is invaluable for a team. Wendell Carter Jr. brings it to a degree, but he's not the shot blocker that Gafford is.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that he does a lot of things that can help this team win, but he does have to refine his fundamentals, I think, a little bit before the coaches really feel comfortable with having him out there for extended minutes.
I've had this conversation with the Bulls outsiders. I've had it with Kendall. I've had it with Will. The contribution or the absence of a contribution from Otto Porter Jr. so far this year, only a few games before the foot situation happened. He'll be reevaluated here in a couple of weeks, apparently. How much better are they with Otto Porter Jr.? Is he the difference between this team being 500 right now and where they stand?
No.
I don't think so.
The coaching element, it's easy to bash Jim Boylan. It's easy to pile on. And one of my answers earlier to you, Jason, I said I talked about the inexperience.
Right.
Well, Jim Boylan's also inexperienced, and that's just a fact. It's not piling on. It's to point out the simple truth, and that is that this is his first full season coaching, and he has had his share of struggles at the end of games, too. So is Otto Porter going to correct that? Let's not forget that Otto Porter wasn't playing all that great in the 9 games that he played before going down with this foot injury this time. So, I can't sit here and say he would be a fix-all because he wasn't shooting the ball great at the early part of the season, the first 4 or 5 games, and then he came back, he's playing better. But he was only averaging 25 minutes a game when he was playing in those 9 games. So that's not even major 6-man minutes. That's, that's a reserve, 7-8-man minutes. So, I'd like to see Otto Porter come in and help, but he's going to be coming off a foot injury. He can't run and do all those things, so it's going to take him some time to get back. I just don't know if Otto Porter is going to be able to help much this season because it's going to take him so much time to get back into the routine, and he wasn't playing that great when he was healthy.
So Coby White had a December that he would like to forget, even though the last week or so he put up some numbers, but seems like he hit the proverbial rookie wall. We obviously, you know, saw him wearing a knee sleeve or a right leg sleeve because he tweaked his knee a little bit a week or so ago. What have you seen from the rookie that you like out of North Carolina and some of the things that he's going to have to work on down the stretch of his first campaign?
I love that he's not intimidated. You know, he can make mistakes, he can miss shots, he can have turnovers, whatever it might be. He keeps coming and he keeps coming, and he doesn't stop. He doesn't get discouraged. And when he does feel a little, you know, frustrated, he gets back in the gym and works. So I just love the young man's mentality more than anything. And I think that's going to set him up for some success as he moves on in his career and starts to understand the NBA game and how to exploit defenses a little bit better. Obviously, his efficiency leaves more to be desired. You want to see him shoot better than 37%. But, you know, he can get hot, and he's had those games now where once he gets rolling, he's hard to control. And I think that's going to be, over time, a nice little dynamic for that Bulls bench for as long as he hasn't come off the bench.
The rest of the Eastern Conference right now, I think the West has been a little disappointing, more so than we'd like to admit, because of how many teams people say will be vying for those eight spots. And I know, you know, teams like Portland and San Antonio should be considered powers that are, you know, lower down in the rung of first round, you know, matchups. But in the East, you know, the East is waiting around for teams like the Bulls and Charlottes of the world and the Orlandos of the world. But the top of the East has Milwaukee, it has Philadelphia, and the East has taken a bashing, rightfully so, over the last 6, 7, 8 years. How do you think the East is going to stack up in the future? Now, we can't predict free agency moves, we can't predict trades, but some of the things that you see building in the Eastern Conference, all this is cyclical. Do you think that there'll be a time where we start to see the East become a little bit stronger? Not as strong as the West, obviously, because their destinations are a little bit more attractive, maybe weather-wise, you know, some teams financially, state of Texas, stuff like that. But do you think the East is set for a little bit of a rebound here with some of the young talent that you see in the Eastern Conference?
I actually do. and it's a great observation by you, Jason, because when you look at the Eastern Conference today, you've got four heavyweight teams in Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, and Philadelphia. That's not even including the Nets when they get Kevin Durant back next year.
Right, and Miami.
Or Indiana when they get Victor Oladipo back maybe late this year and go into next year with Oladipo, Miles Turner, and Domantas Sabonis and have a nice little core. I would also throw Malcolm Brogdon in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Miami Heat, I think I almost heard you say that, with Jimmy Butler and what he's doing and some of that young talent that they're accumulating down there. So between those teams, that's six teams right there that six or seven teams right there that in the East could be really, really interesting. So I do think that even though they don't have the LeBron Jameses and Kawhi Leonards and the Anthony Davises of the world, the James Hardens and the Luka Doncics in the East like they do in the West, they still got plenty of talent and some really good teams.
Well, Darnell, as always, man, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you. It's always fun running into you at the UC. The Oklahoma City time, I followed you. I think I actually had you on the NBA show, the NBA radio show on NBA, SiriusXM NBA radio when you're in Oklahoma City. Glad that you have been covering the Bulls here over the last few years or so. Looking forward to more coverage from you and the Athletic Chicago. So thank you, man. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
That's Darnell Mayberry right here on the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented to you by Coors Light. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. We'll catch you next time right here on the Bulls Talk Podcast.